This episode of TWIP is brought to you by Bay Photo. Sign up for your new account now and get 25% off your first order. Just head over to bayphoto.com. This week on TWIP, it's a double feature. First up, it's a first look at Nikon's Z7 mirrorless camera with Troy Miller. Then after that, another interview with Jack Hollingsworth. It's all about the iPhone for professional level photography. That's coming your way next.
This is TWIP.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. Unless you've been living under a rock, you may not have heard that Nikon released some new hardware. They released their new Z7 series complete, which is a mirrorless camera, complete with a new lens mount and a Z6, and they came out of the gate swinging. And guess who got one of those cameras in their hot little hands yesterday? None other than my good friend, Mr. Troy Miller. Troy, you got one, man.
I did. I even put the strap on it. I never put on the camera strap, but I put this one on for a while.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you're going to be that guy running around?
Until I get a new camera strap.
That's cool. All right, well, let's dive right in because I'm really interested. I'm a prior Nikon shooter. I shot Nikon all through the Air Force, and when I got out of the Air Force, I shot Nikon before so switching over and moving to mirrorless. I had a short stint with Canon. I had a Canon 10D. That was the only Canon camera I ever owned. Not that there's anything wrong with Canon, but that was just the only one I ever owned. And then I moved into mirrorless and all that sort of stuff. So I want to get your initial thoughts on it. First of all, congratulations on your new baby. You know,
yeah, thank you.
Your bouncing baby Z. And let me make sure this is good. So your bouncing baby Z. What are your first impressions of that thing out of the box?
Right out of the box, I was like, okay, I hope I don't have to like learn it. Right. So right out of the box, it felt like a Nikon. I know this is going to sound like an ad, but it felt like a Nikon right away. It felt comfortable. The buttons, the switches were where I expected them to be. The menu system is very familiar to me because I live on my D5 and my D850 continuously. So I quickly threw a battery in it. I went through and configured everything and I started shooting right away. Yeah. And I'm familiar with it. So somebody who shoots Nikon is going to pick this up and feel this is a Nikon. I'm at home here. So they didn't
Say, hey, let's reinvent the wheel and move switches and buttons and dials and knobs all over to different places. Obviously, no. They kept with the same tried and true familiar Nikon design language, and it's working, right? So you were able to pick it up and start using the thing out of the gate.
Yeah. They redesigned the buttons on the back. They stacked them a little tighter on the D5. They're moved around a little bit because there's more room back there.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, the symbols, I know what they're going to do right away. When I go into the menu, I want to configure this button to do focus lock, or I want to go into a focus mode. 90% of it is super familiar right out of the gate. And it's weird though, but I love the shutter sound. The shutter sound is nice.
But it's not a real shutter sound though, right?
I don't know.
I can't hear it. I can't hear it. Here you go. Put it up to the mic.
You gotta open that.
You gotta turn it on here.
Wait, shoot.
Oh, I heard it. Nice.
But it's quiet.
You don't have the vibration of the shutter the mirror moving up and down, all right?
You feel it. I don't know what they do. I don't know what sort of voodoo magic they have in here.
Is it psychosomatic? It. That might be psychosomatic placebo effect going on there.
No, I can feel it.
Really?
Yeah, I can feel it. Let's see if it'll go.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's vibrating the mic. I wonder if they put like one of those little game controller or phone feedback things in there.
Well, there's a shutter in there. I know like on the Sonys, there's a physical shutter. There's an actual shutter in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not just all electric. Yeah. But it's super comfortable. And then we ran around and we photographed in Santa Barbara. The lights went down really low and I'm walking around hand holding it. And I'm just like I love it, though. This is good. I could get used to this, yeah. You know?
Well, let's talk about that, getting used to it, right? So one of the reasons I wanted to chat with you about that particular camera is you are a professional photographer. You put food on the table by clicking the shutter, right? Yeah. The IRS knows you as a photographer.
Yes, they do.
Right? Very well. You pay them very well to know you as a photographer. So with that said, you know, this is a big transition for you. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this is that you're not the guy that just, hey, Nikon released a new toy, I'm going to go get it because I want to be first in line to get the shiny new object. You actually think of it pragmatically and and go in with your eyes wide open and a limited budget, right? So what were the main driving forces of getting this particular camera with through that lens, so to speak?
I wanted the mirrorless. I mean, I wanted the live view capabilities of being able to see my exposures happen live, to be able to preview through the viewfinder. I have a full Sony setup. I've got an A7R Mark III, a E7 Mark II, and I've converted one or two of those to infrared. And I have a complete Sony set and all the lenses that come with that. This, I'm going to be able to drop in my bag with a body cap on it. And when I want to put one of my lenses on it, my Nikon pieces of glass, I can do that. So this integrates immediately into that. I like the size of the mirrorless. I want it to be portable. I want to do it for travel, do it for fine art, my landscapes, my bugs and my macro and all that, kind of my fire. This is going to be the camera for that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, can you talk to that a little bit? Because one of the main things or points of controversy before Nikon released this was, you know what, there's so many people that have so much money invested in lenses that, you know, if Nikon releases a new camera with a new lens mount, that's going to be the kiss of death. They have to stick with the F mount or go home. But they didn't do that. They created a brand new lens mount as expected and an adapter. How's that? Explain that. How has that been out of the box?
It's been a non-issue. I have the adapter, and because most of the modern lenses with Nikon are electronic and focusing and stabilizing and things like that, so I don't need a physical drive, because Nikon's camera still has a physical screw drive to support the older lenses. This doesn't have that. So I love the idea that I can throw on any lens I want, even an old mechanical 80 millimeter, I can put it on there and then manually focus. I am looking forward to what they're able to do with this size of mount. You know, I have no problem buying specialty glass for this body to do specialty things, but I can also use every piece of glass that I have already.
Yeah,
and that's super important.
Can you use Z-glass on the old F mount bodies? Is there a reverse adapter?
No, I don't even know how that would work, because the mount on these things are huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gigantic.
Yeah. It would be a lot of wasted light.
It's a monster. I mean, I don't think that would make sense.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the adapter and putting sort of legacy lenses on that body, what are you giving up? I mean, are you giving up focus speed? Are you giving up, you know, any light loss, or what are the trade-offs for having an adapter on there?
An adapter.
Yeah.
Just
that's an inch. The trade-off. I
mean, yeah. You have an adapter because there's no glass in it. It's literally just electronic connections to the lens.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was shooting with a bunch of stuff last night, switching lenses out, and I saw absolutely no change whatsoever in putting that piece of glass on there, which is nice because it's all native, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a native Nikon body. It's a Nikon adapter going to the Nikon modern glass. So everything is super tight. So I can just grab the 70 to 200 2.8 that I have with an adapter, throw it on here, shoot, throw it in the bag, grab. This is the Z24-70 that came in the kit. I thought it'd be a nice walk around kind of piece of glass. So I got that. So then I can throw that on. Functionality is the same. Focus tracking works the same. Image stabilization on this body is sick.
Really?
It is so good.
Compared to what?
Compared to the D850 or the D5.
Okay. Yeah.
Because this has image stabilization in the body, and I can tell. I mean, Nikon's stabilization has always been not the best. It takes a little bit to kick in, and then when it kicks in, it's really solid. This is instantaneous, and I was shooting last night with a 70 to 200 f4 with the adapter at 1/6 of a second, and I was hand holding it, and I'm just like, no, can't be that sharp. I'm not that good.
Yeah. Have you tested it in video? You're talking still, right? Have you tested it like sort of recording video and walking around? And the other part of that is that body will shoot 4K video, right?
Yeah. Full frame. Yeah, full sensor. Yeah, I guess you get to use the whole sensor. So it was nice, and Nikon to let us use the whole sensor. I was walking around Santa Barbara, and it was amazing because I would focus on somebody on the back, and it would literally track them until they left the frame, and then it would start looking for faces, and it would start tracking again. And then I would touch the back, and I would say, okay, I want you to track this car. And I would be moving, and there would be palm trees and people. It tracked that car, and I'm just like, I don't even know why I want to use that, but I thought, because I don't shoot video, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but it'll do that sort of focus tracking in still mode as well, right? If you're shooting multiple frames a second, say you're doing like motorsports or something, right?
I haven't gotten to that yet.
Yeah. I mean, just got it yesterday. Come on.
I literally haven't had it a full 24 hours. We drove out yesterday to Santa Barbara from Southern California. We drove up to Santa Barbara. And let's see what time we get there. We're like 4 o'clock. Sammy's closed at 5. So I got there at 4 and met my buddy and picked it up, threw a battery in it, took a walk.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about some of the negatives that have been in the press about the Nikon Z series. The big one that everyone's complaining about is the lack of dual card slots in that puppy, right? So, and you, like I said at the beginning, you're a professional shooter, you shoot for a living, you're shooting weddings, which, you know, I would think is one of the most appropriate kind of genres where you'd want to have dual card slots. You don't want to mess up, you don't want to lose data, and you don't want to run out of card space in the middle of something important happening. How are you reconciling that with a camera like this, or a system like the Z system that only has a single card slot?
You know, I haven't had a card failure in probably 10 years, and I use dual cards. However, I'm not going to put my main wedding camera on the line for one card. That makes me very uncomfortable. I mean, you know, in Sony, as a lot of people know, the A7R Mark III series just added dual cards. So up to this point, all these people shooting Sony have been living on one card.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard all these horror stories of cards failing in the middle because they're pretty robust. With that said, I'm not going to put the Z on the front line for my weddings. Family portraits, engagement, engagement, all that other stuff, I'm totally happy to put this on the front line, but I'm still nervous about the one card, and that could just be some old school for me. You know, I'm afraid to throw one card at it, you know.
How long do you think it'll be until you feel comfortable swapping out? Because right now, can I make a prediction? So my prediction would be, you say that now, you know, like, you know, I'm going to let this Z be my secondary system, but the main workhorse is going to continue to be the 800 series. After you sort of get used to the convenience and the technology of through the lens and being able to see what your exposure is going to be before you click the shutter, that's magic, right? And it's hard to give up. It's hard to go back and trust me, I've been there. It's hard to go back in the other direction if you get this new shiny piece of state-of-the-art gear that lets you do all this magic stuff, but that one is more bulletproof, you know? So how long do you think? I know you and I talked. You're shooting something tomorrow, and you got two weddings coming up.
Yeah.
You know, my prediction might be after that first wedding, you might start thinking in that direction. What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I can't see myself putting down the D5 as my primary safe camera.
Yeah,
right? That's the camera that I make my living on, that I have this commitment to get this job done. I can't put that down for that. I could totally see this camera replacing my D850 though.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the argument I think that's going to be happening in the next decade or so with like truck drivers and electric trucks, you know, going from your old truck to using this newfangled thing that does all this crazy cool stuff. But I know the way the old one works, you know, it works great, but I want to switch to the new one. So you're digging it, right? So two thumbs up. And what was your system before you had sort of the all Nikon ecosystem that you're rocking now? You had Sony in there, right?
Well, I do play with Sony. I've got like three Sony bodies and a bunch of lenses for Sony, and that was sort of my play gear. That's the gear that I travel with because it all fits in a backpack nice. It's nice and small. So I use that for everything except for my weddings. We used it a little bit on engagement sessions and family sessions, but it didn't focus as well as the D850 and the D5 did. So we just sort of put that aside. So, you know, this will be a nice addition to that because the D5 and the D850 are rock solid. I mean, they're just machines. They just sit and do their job every day, every time, all day.
Now, what about I know you're a fan of infrared photography, and I know you had one of your Sony cameras modified for infrared. Are you going to do that to one of these brand new, state of the art, fresh off the assembly line Nikons? You're going to hack it up? Come on.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
That's heresy, man.
I got a G6 on order. I'll get in December, and I've already called Spencer's Camera, who does all the conversions. I'll call them, and he's already said, yeah, it looks good. Let's try it. He hasn't done one yet.
You really?
Yeah.
You live life on the edge, man. Come on. That's crazy.
It's a tool. It's a piece of equipment. I want it to do a job for me, and that's fine. You know, it's got to be there. Yeah.
Okay. Here's last question. So you and your wife are a husband and wife wedding photography team. You guys have been, you've sat thousands of weddings together, right? Are you going to equip her, or is she going to get her own Nikon Z series system? Or are you going to give her the old gear while you play around with this shiny new, technologically advanced camera?
She gets the secondary gear. So, but here's the benefit, right? Like, we buy an 850, she gets to shoot with the 850 because I'm more familiar with the buttons and stuff on the D5. We're gonna get we got the Z. So the next shoot we do, she's gonna be shooting with the Z. Yeah. I gotta shoot with the D5 because I gotta make sure that I get the work until we.
Because you're the primary shooter on those jobs, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, man. You must be stoked.
I am.
Did you sleep with it on the nightstand? Was it on the nightstand last night?
Yeah, we stayed up. We both stayed up really late last night. We had some good conversations and we talked a lot. So it was time for us to separate, and I put it up on the shelf. And
you went through every menu item. Better. Yeah.
I did. I went through everyone. Yeah. There's a few I don't know what they do yet, but I've got pretty much all of it dialed in.
You got lots of testing to do, man. You got to test the Wi-Fi stuff. You got to get in there and hammer on that thing. All right, so this was a first look video. This is like the guy. Literally, it's been less than 24 hours since you got your hands on that thing. So I want to we'll check in with you again after you've done a couple of jobs with it, because after the reality distortion honeymoon has sort of worn off. I want to hear, because you're pretty candid about this stuff. I want to hear what you say after you've gone to battle with it, and if it performs in battle as well as it does on the spec sheet. So
right.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. All right. So if people want to see some of these shots, well, hopefully we'll get some shots from you over the next couple of days to put in this blog post so that people can actually see some pixels that this thing generated. if people want to catch up with you and see some of your other work, spicyjello.com, right, is where you're located. All right. Yep. Well, cool.
They can track me down there or on the Twip Pro community. I'm in there a lot too, so that's great.
Yep. Twippro.com. Awesome.
Twippro.com. Yep.
All right, Troy Miller, thank you so much for coming on, man. I appreciate this this first look at the Nikon. It's the Nikon Z, right?
Yep, the Z7.
Nikon Z7, and the 6 is still in the third trimester, and it'll be there shortly. The Stork will arrive, and we'll have a conversation like this about the Z7.
Yeah, you never know. Nikon sends me an email and goes, hey, it's on its way to your dealer. Okay.
Yeah. No, I love it. Cool. Awesome, man. Well, congratulations, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Take care.
Peace. All right, take care.
All right, that's it for that first interview with Troy Miller about his brand new Z7. After this quick break, the next interview is featuring Jack Hollingsworth talking about how you can use your iPhone as a professional level camera. This episode of This Week in Photo is brought to you by our good friends at Bay Photo. Bay Photo is a photo lab located in Scotts Valley, California. They've been around for a long time, and these guys know what they're doing. One of the cool things about Bay Photo that I really enjoy is their attention to detail when it comes to not only printmaking, but also customer service, which, as someone who's making a living with photography, is one of the most important things. Having someone on the other end of the line to answer your questions and to help you through the process of getting your prints made is phenomenal. And these guys know what they're doing. These, and I'll tell you a little personal anecdote, Bay Photo is one of the reasons why I no longer own a physical printer in my home, because I have the internet and I have Bay Photo, and there's a such thing as UPS and FedEx that can send me prints that are made from their state-of-the-art equipment directly to my doorstep. So Bay Photo is sponsoring this episode of This Week in Photo. If you head over to twip.pro/Bay Photo, that's twip.pro/Bay Photo, they will knock 25% off your order for new accounts. That's twip.pro/Bay Photo, and I like to personally thank Bay Photo for their support of This Week in Photo. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo Interviews. Today I'm talking with a good friend of mine, Mr. Jack Hollingsworth. Now, Jack is one of those photographers, educators, authors, you know, those people that have, sort of dedicated his life to spreading the word about photography. But I think more importantly, he's sort of been waving the flag of iPhone photography and how that tool should be considered as a professional tool in many of our arsenals. So he's been talking about that for several years now. And now that the iPhone camera system is really starting to mature, I thought it's time for him to come on and have a discussion about it and give us the real deal, the real scoop about iPhone photography and if it is, in fact, viable for professional level work. So Jack Hollingsworth, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Twip.
You're welcome, man. It's good to have you on. So this is going to be an exciting discussion, for one, because each new iPhone that comes out is the camera system is better than the one before it, right? So, and on This Week in Photo, we kind of talked about it from the standpoint of, like, you know, the old adage or analogy of boiling a pot of frogs, right? You just turn up, you turn up the temperature a degree every hour or something, and they never realize that they're cooking until it's too late, right? Which is horrible, but it's an appropriate analogy for this, because every iteration of the iPhone, Apple turns the notch up a little bit, and before we knew it, we're like, wait a minute, this is a professional level tool. What do you think about that? And just from, like, a high level, before we dive into the conversation, answering the question, is the iPhone ready for professional level work?
Yeah, that's I get asked that a lot, and I'm always hesitant in my space. Like, I'm a commercial travel, leisure, hospitality, tourism photographer. That's what I've been doing for 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I shoot hotels, airlines, cruise lines, destination bureaus, convention and visitors bureaus, you know, blah, 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 those kind of things. I would say for 90% of my work in that space, I can get away with the iPhone.
Wow.
And there's a lot of things the iPhone can't do and is not very good at. But for again, in my world, in my space, the iPhone is like it's the ultimate travel tool.
But that's the thing, though. Talk about that a little bit, Jack, if you could. So you said a couple things there, that there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of things that the iPhone is good at, and there's a lot of things that it's not good at. What is it good at, and what isn't it good at, more importantly?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing that it's good at, Frederick, and, you know, it's a small camera that's optimized for lots of bright outdoor available light,
yeah.
Period. it is not optimized for low light situations and settings. Now, with every iteration of the phone, it gets better and better. And, you know, I don't have the XS or the XS Max, which is what I'll be buying or getting in the next week or so. But in the X, the low light capabilities are, they're kick ass. They're like amazing.
Yeah.
But it is still a camera, a small camera with small optics and small camera hardware that's optimized for outdoor available light situations, because that's how most people use their cameras.
Yeah. But what do you think about the perception, though? So, yeah, and I agree with you. So much like webcams, the cameras in at least iPhones up to this current iteration, the XS and the XS Max, have required a lot of light. Right. So lots of podcasters, YouTubers, gamers, they use the Logitech C920, which is a great camera. But as light decreases, so does noise and and quality. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you give it a lot of light, you give it a ring light like I'm using here. I'm not using that camera. But if you give it a lot of light, then it performs flawlessly. And people are like, wow, what camera are you using? Right.
Mm-hmm.
But with the, you know, notwithstanding the low light issues with smaller sensors, because that's physics, right? What about perception? Like, we're talking about professional level work here. So what about perception? Everyone on the planet, several billion people right now, right, own an iPhone or a smartphone of some type. I would argue, you know, a large percentage of the planet. I'm not going to say everyone. But if you show up as a professional photographer that has invoiced and, you know, you have an amount that you're charging, and you show up, you know, with your camera and you're like, hey, I'm ready to do the job, I got this thing, you know, the client is going to say, well, I got that camera, or my camera is, I got the XS Max, and you're shooting it with iPhone 10, and I'm paying you how much? How do you, you know, how do you circumvent the perception or the prejudice against small devices?
Yeah. First of all, I would never do that. You know, when I'm hired, like say the last 2 or 3 years. So, you know, I stumbled onto iPhone photography back in 2011. I think we've already, you and I have had this discussion before. You know, I went through a couple of years where I'm just, you know, I'm using apps. There's 100,000 photo and video apps on iTunes. 100,000.
And you're not kidding. I mean, that's...
No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that's...
I'm not kidding. So the first couple of years, I went like app just insane. I went app crazy. And I found that eventually, it took me a while. It took me a year, year and a half, maybe even 2 years to figure out that apps should be, you know, refining and not defining my style. And really, at the end of the day, it came back to the fundamentals of photography: light, design, color, focused exposure, white balance. But it wasn't as easy as with big cameras when you're working with smartphones.
Yeah.
So then I started kind of developing the same sensibilities and sensitivities with my smartphone that I use with my big camera. And I call it like a photographic approach. You know, sure. That's, I shoot with my smartphone like I do with my big camera. So fast forward till today, I'd say the past couple of years, I've done a dozen jobs where people are hiring me, not... I'd like to think it's because, you know, I'm a great photographer, but they're hiring me because I shoot with my phone.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I would, if somebody hired me, the last thing in the world that I would ever show up with is my iPhone. No, it would never happen. I still shoot with Canons, you know, still have a several of them, and all my glass and all that kind of stuff. But if I'm being hired on a job, they know what they're getting, you know, before they write me the check. But more recently, people are hiring me because they're using the pictures online and in social media. As a matter of fact, I think it's like 90. I think an ex-Kodak guy told me that 90%, over 90% of all images that we shoot worldwide collectively as a photography nation, they end up online.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, well, guess what? The iPhone files, as qualitative as they stand, are more than adequate for every single social media platform, which is where our pictures, you know, end up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you. Yeah, and there's there's always two sides to a coin, right? So there's, yeah, most of the shots that are being taken, like the stats that you cited, are being taken with mobile and they're being shared online, right? And that's, even as we started this conversation, probably billions of photos have been shared online, right? That's kind of the mechanism. But on that same note, like we were talking about on a recent episode of TWIP, on that same note, there's been this resurgence of printing as well, as the renaissance. I don't even want to call it a renaissance because that makes mm-hmm. it sounds like the printing went away, but it's more of a resurgence of printing and people sort of discovering that having a physical print or giving a physical print to someone has some kind of inherent value versus it's showing up in their inbox or in their feed some way. How does the iPhone play in that world? In other words, if we're going to shoot with an iPhone and say, I'm going to take this thing seriously, am I relegating myself to sharing online, or can I take it into the offline world and actually make viable prints from it?
Yeah, you absolutely can. And I'm thrilled that you asked me that, because, you know, I'm maybe old school in terms of my history, but I am so new school in terms of my sensibility and sensitivities about print. I print all the time. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I just right here, actually, I'll pull the book out, but I'll talk about it. I was hired by a cruise line, and
Look at that. Jack, for the audio listeners, Jack is holding up a beautiful book.
I'm sorry, it's like
no, it's cool. It's really cool. Well, this will be in the YouTube video.
It's an 8.5 by 11 book. And, you know, they didn't ask for that, but it was my thank you card back to the client that hired me and paid me quite well for the job.
Wow.
I went to southern France for 2 weeks aboard a luxury river cruise, and I shot with my iPhone. I taught the guests, you know, iPhone stuff all week long. I was creating social media content with my iPhone. And then I went and made a print book from my 100 hero shots. I swear, Frederick, you look at it, you would have to be some type of physicist or some scientific tech to ever even imagine that these photos were shot on an iPhone. And that I'm not bragging. I'm not just saying that, you know, I'm good, although I'd like to think that I'm, you know, a pretty good photographer, but I can print. And if you were in my studio right now, you'd see 20 by 30s. You'd see a couple 40 by 60s.
Wow.
You'd see tons of these kind of books. And I use an app called Get Recently, which is my favorite, which is like a magazine format book. So there is unquestionably the iPhone files as they stand right now are so adequate for the kind of print that most of us do. Now, if you're talking fine art and big, huge prints where you have to do extreme cropping, then that argument breaks down.
Right. Then it becomes the right tool for the right job. And that's the other thing, right? You know, the discussion we're having is about the idea of using the iPhone in a professional level environment. It's an and discussion, not an or discussion, right? So a lot of photographers, for some reason, we have this or thing in our head. Like, if I'm going to start shooting with my iPhone and taking it seriously, that means I can't use any of my other stuff. I can't use my Canon or my Lumix or whatever. Now I'm an iPhone photographer. It can be or, right? You can choose the right tool for the right job. So Jack, speaking of tools, you mentioned 100,000 apps in the App Store, right? And we're talking iPhone only right now. I mean, you add the Android stuff in there. With 100,000 apps, how does a photographer find the right suite of apps for them? You're the guy, right? Where do you go to find the right apps?
Well, I don't know if I can give you – I wish there was some kind of magic in a hat, silver bullet, magic elixir, something, but I think your best apps are not going to be my best apps. Mm-hmm. Now, in my world, I've probably bought maybe 500 over the past 7 years. Mm-hmm. Of those 500, maybe on an ongoing basis, I use 50.
Wow.
And of that 50, honestly, it's really more like a dozen.
Wow. And you're going to give me, you're going to give me a list of those dozen, right?
Yeah, I'll give you a list. And the weird thing about it, and no one ever believes me, I would say 90% of what I shoot in process today and either sell to my clients or share online for free through social media, blogging, blah, 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 I'm shooting with only two apps. And those are the apps that are the default apps that come with the phone. The camera app, the EyeSight camera, as it's called by Apple, and the Photos app. So 90% of what I'm shooting right now today, I'm doing with two apps, a camera app and a default app, just like anybody would buy in any store, period.
Yeah, and that's great. What about, you know, the one of the apps that I, my go-to apps has been Snapseed, right, from Google. Are you a fan of that app? Have you used it?
Huge, huge fan. As a matter of fact, that would be my second app that I would go to when I really want to do more discerning or discriminating editing.
Yeah.
But, you know, my edits, they last seconds, Frederick. Seconds.
Interesting.
Like I am not, if I have to spend more, I have ADD. I'm like, I have no patience for editing. I'm not really a Photoshop guy. Probably one of the reasons that I like the phone so much. But if I have to spend more than say a minute on an edit, I'm antsy.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to move on.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So my edits last like literally 10 seconds, 15 seconds. And anything that's outside of a minute, I'm going to Snapseed.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's a different mindset, right? From when you're shooting with your Canon and you're in Lightroom, Capture One or Photoshop, you know, where you're going to kind of hunker down with your cup of coffee and get the edit right. Editing on the phone is a different kind of experience. You could do that, but it sounds like for you, it's more of like, hey, I'm in line at the DMV. I'm going to bust out these five images.
That's exactly what I'm at a red light or I'm at the bank or, you know, I can't remember. It could have been Bresson, you know, Henri Cartier-Bresson, but one of those dudes, famous photographers, always talked about like being a hunter or a farmer. And if you're a hunter, you're a capture guy. You live for the capture. That's me. I'm a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
A farmer is the one that tills the soil and fixes the garden and prunes and all that stuff. That's the, you know, think of it like tappers and snappers. The snappers are the hunters. The tappers are the farmers. I'm a hardcore in my heart, my DNA from day one, I'm a hunter.
Yeah.
So I live for capturing and the other stuff, I struggle like everybody else.
Yeah. Well, Jack, let's switch gears a little bit. So, you know, we started this whole conversation. In fact, this interview is, you know, has iPhone in the title, but we're sort of ignoring the gorilla in the room, and that's Android, right? So Android has a ton of apps. Android and the hardware, the cameras and the phones on the Android side are competitive with the iPhone, and people are doing some amazing work on the Android side as well. What drove your decision to sort of hang your hat on the iPhone photography world versus just going sort of global, let's say, and saying, yeah, I'm a mobile photographer, mobile device photographer.
Yeah, that's probably pretty easy because I've just always been an Apple guy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, from day one, and it was just natural. I had a phone in my pocket. I'm embarrassed to tell you how long I had a phone in my pocket before I actually took some pictures.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, my kids had one. Both my daughters, my wife, they were snapping, and I thought, you know, that's kind of cute. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't take it seriously, like everybody else.
No,
right?
I did not take it seriously. Until I took it seriously, I didn't understand its power. So I think it was kind of a natural. Hey, look, I'm an Apple guy. I know zero about Android, Windows phones. What I do know is that between Android and app, Google and Apple, iOS and Android, you know, they own 90% of the market.
Yeah.
And Google, you know, Android sells way more phones than Apple, more phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the iPhone still own the hardcore photography community, if you would.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to like, you know, saying Apple or iPhones are better than Android phones. I have no idea because I don't have the experience, but I do know that in the smartphone photography space, iPhones definitely, without doubt, have the lead.
Yeah. Well, Jack, let's talk a little bit about video here. We've been talking about still photography, and I will put a mark in the column that iPhones are highly capable for still photography. And if you haven't sort of played around with them, with the looking at them through the lens of a pro photographer, you should do that. But on the video side, you know, there's the video capabilities of these iPhones shooting 4K and doing slow-mo and doing all the stuff that that used to require pro-level gear to do in the past. We can do that on the device and also do some editing and upload from the device. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, where you see, you know, from the standpoint of the professional, like we're talking about in this interview, should the iPhone be considered a professional video tool as well, or content creators or YouTubers tool?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think I could make a case that it should. The shooting video on a phone is even more seamless for storytellers and content creators than shooting photo. It's like amazing. If I look back at like 2011 to 2018 now, if I charted that, you could see a gradual increase in my own use of video. Now, I'm a hardcore photographer. I was trained as a photographer. I went to school for photography. That's what I've done for four decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, I produce videos and films and all that stuff, but more as a producer director. This is really the first time, like in the past 7 years, where I actually am shooting myself using my eyes, my vision, my heart with the phone, and I'm beside myself.
Yeah.
I'd say on my phone, if you looked at my phone right now, you'd see that I'm shooting probably half the time I'm shooting in video, and then half the time I'm shooting in stills. I never thought I would get there.
Wow.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. And it is like so flippin' exciting.
Yeah.
And the quality of the video files is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, it is extraordinary. And then couple that with an app like Filmic Pro, you know, my friend Neil Barham up in Seattle. It is the most tricked out video app that I have ever seen in my life.
Yep.
And the feature set inside the app that allows you to do stuff that you really it does compete with big cameras. 100%.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a great time to be alive, right? Because there's so many different ways to tell stories for content creators and storytellers these days. And I think we're succeeding. One of the things that my goals for this interview was to sort of peel back the curtain a little bit from somebody who's sort of hung their hat on this mobile photography, iPhone photography, and sort of show that, you know, if you haven't tried it, get in there and play around with it. It's not just for taking photos of your parking space or your meal and sharing it on Instagram. It can be a serious artist tool, right?
Yes. Yeah, that is like beautifully put, Frederick. That is like, you know, there's seven, like you mentioned earlier, seven and a half billion people on the planet, right? Yeah. Over 5 billion of them own smartphones. Now think of this for a minute. Over 5 billion own smartphones. 90% of those 5 billion, the number one thing they do with their smartphone is to take photos. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Tim Cook said like a year ago at WWDC that iPhone users alone create 1 trillion. Photos alone per year.
Wow. That's
okay.
Crazy.
Think of this, dude. Think of you taking a stack of 4x6 prints, right? Mm-hmm. You're making just print, you have Walgreens, Walmart, Uncle Sam's, you know, wherever you go to make your prints. If you stacked up your 4x6 prints, that stack would go to the sun.
Oh, wow.
And back.
Oh, and back. What?
And back, dude. And back, dude.
See, these are numbers that that humans can't get their brains around.
It's absolutely, and that is, I'm talking about one niche of our market. That's iPhone users over one 12-month period.
Well, Jack, where is this going, right? So where, in your opinion, where is, because we talk about on TWIP, we talk about computational photography, especially when we're talking about the new iPhone releases, because they have the, you know, the adjust the bokeh after the fact feature in there that we had in other apps before, but now it's sort of native in the iPhone. They've got that. They've got all kinds of things that are going on right at the moment when you when you capture the photo. And we're only in 2018 right now. So fast forward, get your crystal ball out, fast forward to, you know, say 2020, 2025. What does this stuff look like? Like what does the device look like? What do the capabilities look like? What can we look forward to?
Well, I don't know what, you know, I'm not prophetic, so I don't know exactly how to look, but if what I'm shooting with right now with my smartphone, mm-hmm. I never even imagined 4 or 5 years ago that I could get with a pocket camera.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. 100%, it's moving in the area of software. And, you know, when the iPhone came out, and you and I know because we have talked, you know all this stuff about photography. You're talking about three drivers that influence. I don't care if you're talking about smartphones or, you know, four-thirds cameras or big cameras. It doesn't matter. You're talking about some level of camera hardware, some level of lens optics, and some level of software.
Mm-hmm.
So think of smartphones as a device that has a little bit of hardware with a lot of software. Yeah. Now, conversely, big cameras are a lot of hardware with a little bit of software.
Yeah.
I mean, think Apple alone has 800 dedicated engineers and specialists working on the camera module.
Wow.
Of the iPhone.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
I mean, think about that. I mean, in the Sony, Nikon, Canon, you know, Pentax, they have a fraction of those resources. So if all that brain power, so to speak, is working on the processing part of photography, I can't wait. Cannot wait.
Yeah. Yeah. It's seriously an exciting time. And I'm, you know, I have no idea where it's going, right? So I'm excited. You hit it right on the head with the whole, you know, it's hardware in it and it's software, but mostly software, right? The processor speeds improve, the way that we look at the optics and the way that those 800 engineers are looking at optics and marrying it to the software and the hardware, that's where the improvement is coming. Here's a question outside of the box. We've got, so you say that, you know, we see that 800 engineers are over in Cupertino or wherever, and they're cranking away. They're trying to make things better for the next iteration of the iPhone. What about these, let's say, quote unquote, traditional camera manufacturers like the Panasonics, the Nikons, the Canons, the Fujis, Olympus, on and on and on. All these guys, are we going to see a convergence of, you know, like you were saying, with traditional cameras, Micro Four Thirds or whatever, it's a box with a little bit of software. Are we going to see more software in these cameras since they are more capable? They have more space to play with. They have a screen. They have proper, quote, proper optics on them. Are we going to see apps show up on these devices as well?
Yeah, I don't see how we cannot. I mean, how are these guys going to make money?
Yeah.
Now, you know, those camera manufacturers today, tomorrow, and probably for the next few years, are always going to own the commercial space, and there'll always be a market for that. But the smartphones own the consumer space, which is, it's just off the charts big. So mm-hmm. even for the big guys to survive, they are going to have to fold more software and processing power into their devices that they're selling to consumers.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, every iteration the phone comes out, I get involved in what, you know, they're just fruitless and maybe futile discussions about, you know, oh my goodness, now the iPhone is like at an F22, or now we're, geez, that's like, you know, a third stop more than F28, and yeah, but really, I could care less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is a tiny, tiny lens, and the camera is a tiny lens. I'm not discounting how great those elements are, but it's the processing power. It's kind of like thinking of the camera and the optics like raw food.
Yeah.
They just create raw. It's the groceries, but it's the processing power that cooks the food that makes it yummy.
It's the chef.
So yeah, it's the chef part. And I get, obviously I'm excited, but I don't think you'll ever find anybody that's more enthusiastic about computational photography and where it's going in the smartphone arena, because I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, it's exciting because as you think about the computational photography and some of the, you know, I'm oversimplifying it, but the rudimentary things that Apple's doing, like allowing us to blur the background after the fact, which is magic, you know, to us older photographers. But, you know, I look at this stuff and I look at where Apple's going with augmented reality and some of the other areas that they're investing in and looking at how that might affect the art of photography going forward, being able to place things in scenes or remove things from scenes on the fly, having objects track to other objects on video and record that. There's a lot that could happen, right? It's a lot. It's exciting of where things are going. Like I always say, I always tell people that we're all born too early, right? Because, or maybe right on time. I don't know. Depending on what, you know, next week holds for the planet, maybe we're born on time. Yeah. But it's amazing. Well, let's wrap this subject. So,
Let me say too, because
yeah, go for it.
I love your audience. I love the work that you do, Frederick. You know, I'm one of your biggest fans. I know how much blood, sweat, and tears you put into your TWIP and all the other assets that you build and promote. And, you know, it's fantastic. And I know your audience are big photography aficionados.
Yeah.
I want to go on record saying I'm rooting for those big camera manufacturers.
Yeah.
And while I'm currently obsessed with iPhone photography, I want those big camera manufacturers to figure it out, keep going, and create products that wow all of us.
Yeah.
Because I think that competitive market space is really what all of us consumers ultimately need.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I would go on to say that, you know, you look at these manufacturers, and I think a lot of them are, I don't want to say missing the boat, because I'm not saying I'm smarter than they are, but you look at them and they put a lot of value in the installed base and the lenses as sort of being the glue and the anchor that's keeping their installed base in place. Because you invest in these lenses and, okay, of course you got to buy the next camera body, and it makes the switching costs higher to move on to another camera. But I would argue that they should look at Silicon Valley, look at the app economy and how that turned Apple around, selling digital content and digital goods, you know, iTunes and the App Store or the Google Play Store, right? So if you have an installed base of millions of hardware devices out there, i.e. cameras, and you've enabled them with the capability to run apps, you essentially have a bunch of computers out there that are waiting for software with hungry photographers like us that want a cool app that will let me do things that my camera can't do out of the box, right?
Yes.
So they could crack. And I often wonder about this. Why haven't they cracked that app economy
nut
with the next cameras? Because it feels like, you know, I've got this device that does all the stuff, right? So it's been proven out that you can do some magic in a little tiny device like this. So how come I can't take my larger Micro Four Thirds camera or DSLR or whatever camera and have similar processors in it, have a cellular modem in it, have a Wi-Fi chip in it, and do all these kinds of things that I can't even imagine doing, like multiple cameras that talk to each other, you know, and I'm controlling them from an iPad or something like that. It seems like that, for me, that seems like the next logical step. Yeah. And the cameras that we have today are relatively dumb, right? They have, it's f-stop, shutter speeds, ISOs, and different ways to play with those, right? You know,
they are so dumb. They are boxes with holes in them.
Yeah.
All of them. Even the best smartphone.
Yep.
There's a box with a hole in it. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Well, Jack,
and you need like a, which kind of goes back to stuff you and I have always kind of, you know, loved. And that's, it really, it doesn't really matter. It still takes a photographer's vision. It doesn't matter what kind of device that you have, right? Whether I'm shooting with a smartphone right now, you're shooting with a 4/3, somebody else shooting with a view camera, somebody else shooting with a Holga, Polaroid, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
It is still the heart, the vision, the passion of the photographer using the device to create the magic.
Yeah, yep, I agree. You know, it's like Batman. You know,
yeah, it's Batman, brother.
Like Batman, you know, he has all the toys and he knows how to use all the toys and can do some cool stuff with them. But I would argue Bruce Wayne, you know, could probably do some cool stuff too without all of his toys. So, you know, we're all Bruce Wayne and our cameras are, you know, our toys. Yeah. And you're sitting there in your Batcave there. So,
there we go. I'm in my Batcave, brother.
So, Jack, tell me, you got some stuff coming up. Give me the rundown of what's happening in Jack Hollingsworth world.
Oh, yeah. Really some exciting stuff. One, I have my second book, you know, in the works. It's called iPhone Photography That Doesn't Suck. I got a couple new blogs coming out probably in the next 30 days. I'm working on a podcast, you know, that's dedicated specifically to iPhone photography issues, plus my normal workshops and speaking. And I'm speaking a lot at Apple stores and just lots of stuff going on. I'm obsessed with this device, and the way I see it, I'll probably be obsessed for quite some time.
I love it. I love it. Where should people go to see all this stuff? I mean, and catch up with you and subscribe to your workshops and all that stuff.
Yeah. I would say I'm most active on Twitter. That's at PhotoJack. Mm-hmm. I'm off and on. I'm not the greatest Instagrammer, but you can find me at Jack Hollingsworth on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then my main step forward is jackhollingsworth.com. But it's either temporarily disabled, but I have a product site and a brand site coming that's really going to be cool. Lots of pretty exciting things. So kind of keep looking for jackhollingsworth.com. In the meantime, you know, look me up at PhotoJack on Twitter.
Perfect. And I'll link to as much as I can from in the blog post for this episode. So be sure to send me all the links that you want me to direct people to. Jack Hollingsworth, man, thank you for coming on. You know, we tried to get you on, what was it, last week, I think it was? Yeah, and we had some Skype, the Skype gods weren't having it. So,
yeah. So I would think it was more operator error, and you're being kind. And
I'm blaming it on Skype. I like to blame it on Skype. Okay. It's not your fault, Skype.
Okay.
But we got you now. So thank you for coming on, and I hope to have you on This Week in Photo in the future as a panelist. Are you up for that?
Love to come on, man. I love chatting with you, and I feel like you're the kind of guy I could probably hang out with, drink a few beers, and probably talk for days without sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool, man. I feel exactly the same way. Send me that. And you know what? Send me that list of apps that you have, or even just do a screen, do a screenshot of your photos page in your phone.
Good idea.
And then I'll post that. You know, this is what Jack's phone looks like. You know,
actually, I'm doing a PowerPoint presentation for somebody, and my list of apps is in there, and I think it's on one single screen. So I'll take a shot of it, or actually send you that template.
Perfect, perfect. All right, Jack Hollingsworth, thank you so much, man.
Peace and out, man.
All
Thanks,
right.
bro.
Take care.
This is Twitter.